This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan and together with me is T. Xiao Eek. So we have two stories for you today. First up, we are being told to stay home to stop the spread of the coronavirus. But home isn't always a safe space, especially for children living in situations of violence, you know, where physical, psychological and sexual abuse occurs. So we'll be speaking to the Women's Centre for Change about the impact of COVID-19 on children's vulnerability to sexual violence and exploitation, and how we all need to play a part to end the cycle of abuse.
And in our second story, we'll be looking at a photo shoot that involved Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin, who was wearing a blazer without a blouse underneath in some of the photos. And this shoot has received sexist backlash and sparked a lot of online debate as well. So we'll be discussing why women in politics are unfairly scrutinized for what they wear. So we want to find out from you, do you judge female politicians by what they wear? And if you do sometimes, perhaps, or if you do all the time, do tell us why as well. On Twitter, we have a poll running with that question. And so our options are yes, sometimes, yes, and men too, or no, it doesn't matter to you. So you can take that poll at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899.
And we'll be revisiting that a little bit later. But first, it's estimated that one in five children suffers from one or another form of sexual abuse or victimization during their childhood. In Malaysia, community studies have put the figure at one in 10 children. So that's about 750,000 children who are sexually abused. And in 95% of these cases, their sexual abusers are people that are known to them. Mm-hmm. Now, this violence has been fueled by many factors for generations now. This includes, you know, silence, poverty, racism, gender inequality, and even the systematic disenfranchisement of vulnerable populations.
Yeah, but this year, COVID-19 has created a perfect storm for unprecedented levels of abuse by trapping children at home with their abusers, and this further drives the problem underground. In the US, for example, emerging data reflects a hidden pandemic of abuse, so reports of child abuse were reportedly down, but it's believed that this is because victims have been locked away from the caring adults in their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, doctors, teachers, child protective services and advocates who would typically be able to identify this behavior.
Mm. And another result of COVID-19 is that children are also spending a lot more time online. This increases their exposure to sexual abuse and exploitation. So, for example, child sex abuse live streams are increasing, and predators have been using the dark web to discuss how they can exploit lockdowns to produce and share more child sexual abuse material. So to back this up, Interpol released a report in September this year, which highlighted the fact that underreporting of child sexual abuse and increased sharing of child exploitation material through peer-to-peer networks are among the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm. And that report also outlined some of the key environmental, social and economic factor changes due to COVID-19, which have impacted child sexual exploitation and abuse across the world. So they include, firstly, the closure of schools, of course, and or subsequent movement to virtual learning environments. Secondly, the increased time, as you said, that children spend online for entertainment, social and educational purposes. Third, the restriction of international travel and the repatriation of foreign nationals. And finally, limited access to community support services, childcare and educational personnel who often play a key role in detecting and reporting cases of child sexual exploitation. So with this increase in obstacles for victims to report offences or access support, there are concerns that some offences may never even be reported after a substantial delay.
Mm. And the Interpol report also highlighted that during the pandemic, children seek alternative ways of socialising, so through games, chats, social media and so on, without necessarily being aware of these any associated risks. Mm. At the same time, the report concluded that offenders who usually operate online are likely to increase the amount of time that they spend online. So they adapt and change their online environment so that they can avoid police detection and to target platforms that are based on being popular with children, basically. And besides using social networks and messaging applications, as well as dark net forums, child sexual exploitation and abuse offenders often use what's known as Zoom bombing. You know, this is when during virtual school classes for children, these offenders intentionally break in and share child sexual exploitation and abuse material.
Absolutely shocking.
That is horrible. And all of this, according to Jürgen Stock, who is Interpol's Secretary General, is just the tip of a growing iceberg when it comes to child exploitation.
So here in Malaysia, the Women's Centre for Change, which is a non-governmental and non-profit organisation dedicated to the elimination of violence against women and children, they released a statement last Friday to highlight the impact of COVID-19 on children's vulnerability to sexual violence and exploitation. In September this year alone, they handled 15 telephone counselling cases of sexual violence involving child victims below the age of 18, which was their highest monthly total to date.
And now with COVID-19 cases rising in the country and the subsequent implementation of more stay-at-home measures by government, including the closure of schools in certain states, there is a heightened fear that children may again be at risk of sexual abuse, both online and offline. So joining us now to discuss why we need to be paying more attention to this issue is Mangaleshwari Subramaniam, who is the service manager for the Women's Centre for Change. Hi, Mangalesh. Thanks for joining us today. To start off with, have measures taken by the government to restrict the spread of the coronavirus, such as different forms of movement control order, have these measures led to children being at an increased risk of sexual exploitation, whether online or offline?
Unfortunately, yes. If you look at our published article statistics, when it comes to child sexual abuse, 1 out of 10 children in Malaysia are sexually abused, where 95% are people known to them. Therefore, what happens is that the lockdown increases the risk as the child may be stuck with the primary perpetrator at home. And for right now, because children are spending more time online due to virtual learning and recreational, they are also equally exposed to sexual assault online, because we've been receiving messages from young girls seeking help because they've been harassed online by random strangers, sending them nude or private part pictures and requesting the same from them.
So you're definitely seeing evidence of this through your work at the WCC. And how do the number of cases you see now compare to cases from pre-COVID times?
If you look at the cases that WCC have handled pre-COVID, even till January or February, we have seen about 3 to 4 cases per month. But now, since May, we saw a sharp rise where almost 7 to 12 cases recorded each month. And in September, we have seen about 15 cases. And the number may sound small, but it raises our concern because these are only reported cases. And we do not know how many cases are going on without being reported.
And what are some of the factors that could be leading to this increase of incidences involving child sexual abuse?
Okay. One is due to, as I mentioned earlier, the children may be stuck with their perpetrator at home. And so the frequency of the abuse may be increased. And we have a case where the uncle visited the child's the nephew's family. And due to COVID lockdown, he stayed with the family throughout the lockdown. And during that time at night, what he does is that he shows child pornographies to the boy. And later on, he started to molest and sexually assault the boy. And another thing when it comes to online, where we can see because children are bored and they may be online chatting with random strangers and making friends with random strangers. So one of the other things that we see right now is that so after befriending these random strangers, and we have a case where the girl befriended someone in Instagram and then agreed to go out with this young man, he took her to another house, a house, and raped her. And after that, 3 or 4 of his friends joined and also sexually assaulted the girls. So children are actually vulnerable even at home or even when they're online.
Has the pandemic and subsequent movement control orders also resulted in more obstacles for victims to report offences?
When we really look at it, the truth is child sexual abuse cases are severely underreported. One, the child may not know what is being done to them is wrong, because it's, as we have looked at it, about 95% of them are actually someone known to the child, someone the child trusts. So what the child is left in a confused state. And usually when the perpetrators sexually assault the child, they do threaten the child to keep it as a secret. We have a case where a very young child was threatened, "I will kill your cat if you tell someone." It is a scary thing for a child. Or there are times we look at it, there are certain cases where the perpetrators are actually somewhat in a helping position to the family. That means the family may be going through a financial crisis. There's this external person who comes in to support the family. And that's how they access to the children. And after they have sexually assaulted the child, they would go like, "Okay, if you tell, and you know, I will stop helping your family. So think about what will happen to your parents." So they manipulate the young children in this way. And the other thing is that what we saw also, when a child tells, does people believe them? Does an adult believe them? Because a lot of time the children are questioned, "Are you sure? You are lying." So it actually stops the child from disclosing or sharing what is happening to them.
And could the fact that people have less freedom of movement during the MCO also mean that some may never report a case following a substantial delay?
Okay, it's not only during this lockdown, but recently WCC, we have released a cartoon, online cartoon book on child sexual abuse, where an uncle stayed with the family and sexually assaulted the niece and told her to keep it as a secret. The book is called Lisa in a Secret. So it has over 600,000 reach in FB and over 100,000 reach in Twitter. And after we have published this book, we started to receive a lot of comments in the public. And what are the common things that we saw was that messages we saw was that, "I wish someone told me this when I was young. I wish we had this book when I was young. I wish I could kept asking for help when my mom did not believe me." So what we could see is that it's not only during the lockdown. It has always been there that a lot of time the children have never sought help, or they do not know where to seek help, and if they have never revealed what happened to them. And when people did not believe, they stopped telling. So this is not only due to lockdown.
But can such lockdown measures grant people who abuse greater freedom to act without scrutiny or consequence?
You see, with or without lockdown, we can see the perpetrator still have access to the child. But when you look at the lockdown, it can happen two ways. One, the whole family members are locked down together. Therefore, it limits the perpetrator's access to the child. Or, let's say in a family where due to the lockdown, the father may have lost the job, the mother was able to retain the job, and the father is the primary abuser. So the father has the child for 24/7. So the frequency of the abuse will increase.
And how have you at the WCC been assisting in such cases?
Okay, when it comes to WCC, we work closely with Penang government hospitals, meaning we, out of the six hospitals, government hospitals in Penang, we will be five: Penang General Hospital, Seberang Jaya, and three district hospitals, Balai Pulau, Bukit Mentajam, and Kepala Bandas. So when a child sexual assault victim is admitted at the hospital, they get the parents or the guardian's consent and refer the child and the family to us. And once the case is referred to us, we provide counseling for the children and also for the family. We also provide emotional support. And if the case goes to court, we too provide court support. And recently, the other thing, and majority of our child sexual assault cases are actually from the hospital. But now what we also have received is that we have started to receive calls from other states, from either parents or teacher, asking for guidance on how to help handle disclosures, or you know, if the case is already being reported, what are the procedures, how's the investigation process, or if they do not know what is happening to the case. So we started to receive more calls in such ways as well from different states.
So what are your recommendations for the relevant agencies and law enforcement to address the additional threats presented by the COVID-19 pandemic?
If you look, child sexual abuse is a criminal matter. So the important agencies which play a role in eradicating criminal issues are the police, hospital, the medical staff, and the welfare. So we feel that there should be a continuous training for these officers on how to handle the child victim. So what do I mean by that? If, let's say, during investigation, interviewing an adult would be very different from the way we interview a child. And even when it comes to children, you need to be more age-specific in the way you talk and the methods that you use to retrieve the information from the child. Because any interrogation that handled insensitively may make the child further traumatized or stop them from talking. And even when we go to hospital, the children need to be handled with more care. You know, how are they going to take the physical evidence from a child? That needs to be addressed as well. And after the child has been treated at the hospital, the investigation follows, what welfare department can actually, welfare officers, child protectors can do? Are there enough support to help the child heal from the trauma? So these are the things that we actually have to look at when we are assisting a child victim. And it is important for these people to be trained on how to handle the victims with more care and sensitivity.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the last thing we want is for the child to be further traumatized after having experienced abuse. But as we stay home more, what signs should other family members, caregivers, or neighbors look out for to help prevent child sexual abuse?
Okay. There are some telltale signs that, you know, when a child says or shows that as an adult, we have to be very alert on the children's behavior, change of behavior. So when a child complains about pain in their private part, or they feel certain individuals, or once a jovial child starts to isolate themselves, or the child may know things, sexual knowledge or sexual behaviors, which is inappropriate for the age. So these are some of the signs that they actually can look out for and start to explore with the child. Okay, what is happening? Why are you... I can see some change in your behavior. Is there something happening? You know, so the way you talk to the child, then you should approach the child in a more careful manner and to explore what is happening. And for us, what we feel is that the other people that should be also trained, they are teachers. Because one of the people who have access to children for more longer hours are teachers. They should be also trained to identify the signals and also handle disclosures if the child comes and tells.
All right. And what assistance do organizations like WCC need, especially now during the pandemic, to help those who are facing violence and abuse?
Okay. Just like any other non-profit organization, one of the biggest challenges to sustain funding to support the staff, the service providers. So what we can see is that as the work that NGOs like WCC do is a complement to the work of the government to protect our children, it will be good if they could provide proper amount of allocation to support the NGO work so we can continuously do what we do.
Any final message that you'd like to leave us with, Manglis?
Okay, if a child comes and tells, please believe them. And if you do not know what to do, you can just call up an agency like us, WCC, to get some guidance on how to support the child. Because it's very difficult for a child to step up and, you know, disclose what is happening to them. So when they do, don't question them.
Thank you, Manglis. That was Mangleswari Subramaniam, the service manager for the Women's Centre for Change. So just echoing some of the things that she highlighted, you know, community groups, public authorities and abuse support networks do urgently need resources to provide the right services that stops this sort of abuse and can actually save lives, you know. As it is, many of these groups are already underfunded even before COVID-19 struck.
Yeah, so grassroots organisations like them, they're at the front lines of protecting children and they definitely definitely need more resources without adequate funding, you know, for things like online technologies and training that prioritize safety, being able to expand helplines and shelters, you know, having, you know, without all of that, social workers and counselors can't effectively protect children in the midst of this huge health crisis that we're all facing. And it's, you know, like we said earlier, it's not just the COVID-19 pandemic, right? There's a hidden pandemic of abuse as well. So if you'd like to support the WCC, do consider donating to them. You can head to their website at wccpenang.org, or you can follow them on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter to keep updated on their work.
Yes. You know, this pandemic has certainly created a paradox in terms of staying safe at home, right? Governments across the globe have called upon all of us to play our individual part in tackling the coronavirus by staying at home. But a critical mindfulness of what this really means for many children is also really important.
Yeah.
So that's all the time we have for that story today. But you can continue to tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back after a short break. This is The Daily Digest on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.